The Orange FM.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I am here with the man who looks way better in a bow tie than he does in a pinstripe suit, Adam Farmer.
And you know what? My collection is growing. I just got a new bow tie this past weekend, and I must say, it is one of my favorites.
I think, was that the one you were wearing in your Easter photos?
It was. I even had suspenders on for a little bit. I ended up having to take them off because they were just a bit much, but I did have a bow tie that I wore pretty much the entire day. I was pretty pleased with myself.
Nice. Well, do you know the significance of today? I'm popping this on you. We didn't even talk about this pre-show.
Oh, goodness. Let's see here. The significance of today.
Well, there's actually a couple things that you could answer that would be correct.
We've already passed David Tennant's birthday, which was like a week ago, which also happens to be Jackie Tyler's birthday as well. So I thought that was kind of funny that Tennant and Jackie shared the same birthday, which of course her name is not really Jackie, but for the life of me, I don't know what her name is. But the significance of today,
which is April 23rd as we're recording this.
April 23rd. Oh, goodness. I thought I was going to be able to pull something out of thin air, but I have nothing. What is the significance of today?
Today is William Shakespeare's birthday.
Oh, yes, it is. It is William Shakespeare's birthday. I even saw a few posts on that I meant to watch the episode with Shakespeare in it, but I didn't.
Yep, so that is the Doctor Who connection there. Doctor Who has met Shakespeare, and that's actually one of my favorite episodes. Tennant's run, meeting Shakespeare, and the Harry Potter reference at the end. That was a good one.
Yeah, there was a lot jam-packed into that episode, including a foreshadowing towards the 50th anniversary episode. So there was all sorts of packed information into that episode. Good pull by you. It is the Bard's birthday today.
And I believe the other thing I was thinking of, I could be wrong about this. I think I saw somewhere that today is the 3-year anniversary of the Silence as a villain.
Really?
It was three years ago today they were introduced. I think I saw that.
I think we are very, very close because I know there was a collection of fans, which once again, I wholeheartedly intended to join in, who were going to don the tally marks on their arms today.
I saw different people posting on Twitter, different pictures that people were putting the tally marks. So I think that I'm correct in that it was 3 years ago today that they debuted. So the Silence were a pretty legit villain. I think probably since the Weeping Angel is probably the best one that they've come up with.
I definitely like the Silence, but I've already gone on record on many a podcast saying that as much as I loved them, I was sorely disappointed at what they became in the end. I was really hoping for a more epic villain. But hey, they definitely caused a lot of fear in that 2-episode arc with everybody running around, not really knowing who they were, can't even remember them, but they had the tally marks. If I were ever to go and cosplay at a con, I would be very tempted to go that route. Very classy and very, it looks scary, I guess, in my mind.
Yeah, if you could pull that off, I'd be very impressed. You'd have to find some pretty legit mask, or I don't know how you would
Not the Silence, the tally marks.
Oh, just the tally marks. I thought you were the Silence, like this alien with the skinny suit and the clawed hands.
That would be amazing, though, if there was a Silence walking around at a con somewhere. But, of course, no one would ever remember, so.
I haven't seen that yet. I have seen plenty of Weeping Angels, but I've never seen a Silence.
You might have seen it, though, Aaron. That's what I'm trying to say. You might have seen it. You just don't remember it.
Good point.
It's the perfect cosplay outfit.
Well, let's talk about some news, I guess we could say. There's, you know, in this time, there's not really a lot of news going on, but there are a couple things that we wanted to discuss on this episode. First of all, and this is, I don't think comes as any surprise to anyone, John Barrowman has said that he would return to Doctor Who or Torchwood if asked.
Yeah, definitely not a surprise on that one. But the biggest question is, how do you feel about that? How would you feel to see Captain Jack show up for one more go?
I always like returning characters. I think it's cool for a character to show back up. You already have an invested interest in those characters. So if someone like him showed back up, or, you know, if they had Mickey Smith show up, or any, pretty much any old companion, if they had him show up, I'd like it. I always liked him as a character. He was pretty good. How did you feel about Captain Jack as a character in Doctor Who? Were you a fan?
I liked him. I really did. And I think if he were to show back up, I think this would be the Doctor to do it with. I don't think with Smith it would have ever had the same feel. There's something about his relationship with Eccleston, where Eccleston was more the straight-laced, more, not dramatic, that's not the word I'm looking for, but he was more solemn of a Doctor, and yet Captain Jack added a little bit of flippancy to it. And if how I'm imagining Capaldi to be as the Doctor, if that's actually going to be the case, I think Captain Jack would be an amazing addition moving forward. Is it going to happen? I don't think it will, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing them in the TARDIS together again. There are, just the article that mentions this, there are some storylines that have yet to be explored with Captain Jack, which there was always that weird feeling at the end where it's just kind of in passing, but it's supposed to be like this aha, slap your forehead moment, where they mention that Captain Jack possibly could be the face of Bo, or he is the face of Bo. The article mentions that that's a storyline that has yet to be explored. So it would be really cool to see Captain Jack come back and kind of progress that story just a little bit more, to see how in the world does Captain Jack, the undying, become the face of Bo in a jar. It would be really interesting just to see them explore that just a wee bit more.
You were supposed to be dying.
There are better things to do today. Dying can wait.
Oh, I hate telepathy. Just what I need, a head full of big face.
Shh. I've grown tired with the universe, Doctor, but you have taught me to look at it anew.
There are legends, you know, saying that you're millions of years old.
Well, that would be impossible.
Wouldn't it just? I got the impression there was something you wanted to tell me.
A great secret.
So the legend says.
It can wait.
Oh, does it have to?
We shall meet again, Doctor, for the third time, for the last time, and the truth shall be told. Until that day.
That is enigmatic. That is textbook enigmatic.
So I guess he's immortal, but he can age, it seems like.
Yeah, and end up dying in the end, which always confused me, but I guess it all depends on immortality is a matter of perspective. It's you're only immortal to those who die before you. I don't know. I guess that's one way of looking at it.
That was deep.
a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
You're only immortal to those that die before you. Is that what you said?
That's what I said. Yeah.
Is that a quote from somebody, or did you just come up with that?
No, I just pulled that out of nowhere.
Jeez, I'm writing that down. That was good stuff. All right, so John Barrowman says he would come back to Doctor Who, but there is an actor that says he will not ever be in Doctor Who. And, you know, a lot of fangirls may cry, but Benedict Cumberbatch, you're going to have to just watch Sherlock to get more of him, because he says he will not be in Doctor Who anytime soon.
Are you surprised? Does that surprise you at all?
No, I don't think it was ever I never thought it would happen. And I don't know. I think because, you know, Moffat has ties to both shows, people thought maybe there was a possibility of a crossover, you know, that he would come on the show at some point, or, you know, Matt Smith might show up on Sherlock at some point. But I mean, they're completely different worlds. There's really nothing about them that are even in my mind similar, that it would just be weird, I think, if he showed up in Doctor Who.
Okay, so you're not surprised, but are you the least bit disappointed?
Not really. I mean, I like Benedict Cumberbatch just fine. I like him as Sherlock. I'm not as big of a fan of Sherlock as a lot of people are. I mean, I think it's an interesting show, but I don't go head over heels for it. I think he's a good actor, but I don't know. I don't love him so much that I would be like, oh yeah, he's in Doctor Who, and like get all excited about it. I'm really not disappointed.
Okay, so I guess I'm going to have to play the role of just all-out fanboy, because yes, I was disappointed. Not really surprised, but I would have loved to see Benedict Cumberbatch, really no matter the role, at some point being in Doctor Who. Could you imagine Benedict Cumberbatch playing the role of the Master at some point? At that point, I wouldn't care who the Doctor was. I would just be excited that he was in the role of a Time Lord, let alone the Master. I was a little bit disappointed. It would be fun to see him play that role.
I could see it. Like, if he was the Master, maybe save it for like a Christmas special or something where it's a one-off, you know, he's going to come in, be the Master for one episode, dies at the end or whatever. You know, that would be kind of cool. I give you that. You know, because his fans recognize him, it would bring a lot of hype to the show, bring more legitimacy to the show, and probably more visibility to it as well if you put somebody like Benedict Cumberbatch on there. So that aspect of it, sure, I think I would get excited for that. But I think because I knew that it was never going to happen, when I found out that he basically says that he'll never be in Doctor Who, it was like, okay. I kind of knew that.
I am still going to hold out hope that there will be an episode directed by Peter Jackson that stars Benedict Cumberbatch.
Well, I guess there is a connection there with Peter Jackson, because he's the voice of Smaug.
Exactly.
Did I pronounce that right, you Tolkien nerd?
yes, I think you're pretty darn close.
Pretty darn close. I'll take it. So, the other thing that we wanted to talk about is, it's kind of spoilery. So if you don't want to hear about anything that's coming up in the next season of Doctor Who and season 8, the Capaldi stuff, if you don't want to hear about any set pictures or videos or costumes or anything like that, tune out right now. You know, fast forward a little bit, check, see if we're done, maybe fast forward a little bit more, but we're going to talk a little bit about some of the latest, kind of rumors and leaks from the new series. Doctor Who meets Robin Hood.
Yeah. Wrap your mind around that one.
So the Doctor can meet fictional characters?
Not fictional. We can accept this one. I'm hoping that this is just opening up the floodgates for him meeting King Arthur at some point in the future. But anyways, yeah, this is one of those stories that really started as a trickle in the rumor mill. So we found out, okay, Mark Gatiss is coming on board to direct an episode, and then we find out a little bit more that it might be related to Tom Riley coming on board as a character. And then all of a sudden it just exploded. And now there's no guessing at what's taking place. It's pretty much all but been completely released for everybody to watch, it seems like. But yeah, Peter Capaldi, 12th Doctor, meets Robin Hood, Sherwood Forest, Bows and Arrows, Friar Tuck. It's going to happen.
Yeah, because when I first heard the rumors about this, I was thinking, okay, he's going to meet a Robin Hood-like person. Maybe somebody that the legend was based on, but it's not going to actually be Robin Hood. But it seems like from the leaks that we've seen, and who knows how accurate they are, that the character that he's meeting actually is named Robin Hood.
Yeah, it looks like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's Doctor Who meets Robin Hood. There's a short little video that was recorded. Probably it wasn't supposed to be recorded, but it was, and it was posted, where you can pick up bits and pieces of dialogue. And it goes as far as the character that Tom Riley is playing, that we're just calling Robin Hood, calling for Friar Tuck to bring a bow. So yeah, it looks like they're going the whole nine yards, and every character that you pretty much know from Robin Hood is going to be there. There's even a picture of the cast where there is someone of smaller stature that I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that's Little John.
They'd go that direction with it, you think? Because Little John has always been a larger character in Robin Hood lore.
Yeah, I could see them going that direction and kind of playing it up just a little bit more and making the name... Yeah, you know, rumors always get expanded and stuff like that. So
if they have a little person on the show as Little John, I feel like that would be borderline offensive.
it might have some troubles with political correctness. But you know what? We're from the States. Maybe there's a little less of the concept of political correctness when you go across the pond.
So did you see the video that it might have been the one you were referring to, but where it looks like whoever's filming it is like in the bushes and there's like branches in front of them. And is that the one you were talking about?
Yeah. And we'll just go ahead and call him by name, Ryan Farrell. The video is tagged. It's pretty hard to miss if you're watching the same one that I've seen.
So if BBC is looking to go out and get somebody, they can they know exactly who to look for.
Yeah, they know exactly who to look for, and it's even his Twitter handle is posted right on the video. So there's no guessing who probably within the crew decided to record the video, unless this is just some guy standing behind the do not enter tape who just happened to have a really good view of what was going on.
Yeah, the video that he filmed, it looks like the doctor actually has a bow and arrow in his hands, and he's trying to pull back the bow, but he's having trouble with it. I guess maybe solidifying the fact that he's not very familiar with using weapons.
Yeah, which kind of makes me feel a little bit better, because everything I was reading leading up to watching the video, they made mention of the doctor standing side by side with Robin Hood with a weapon ready to fight. And it's like, wait, that doesn't seem to jive with what I know of the doctor. And then watching the video, it's like, okay, he really has no idea what he's doing. But then once again, if you listen, you can pick up on some of the conversation taking place. And like, he tries to pull back on the bow and their arrow goes all wonky and he can't really get it right. And then he says, okay, I cheated. And then he like reiterates the fact that he cheated. So I don't know what he cheated on. But it's just kind of interesting that it looks like they're having some type of competition, and now the doctor's having to tell the truth that whatever Robin Hood thought he was able to do, he really can't.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I'm looking forward to it, just seeing what it's all about. It's a little weird, I think, that because Robin Hood is a fictional character, it is a little strange that the doctor's meeting him. So I'll be interested to see how they kind of explain that. I've always liked Robin Hood stuff. I've liked the movies that have come out, and the animated Disney Robin Hood movie is one of my favorites. So.
The BBC TV series, perhaps?
I have never watched that version of it. Is that any good?
I enjoyed it. It was my introduction to BBC TV prior to Doctor Who. So, yeah, it was because of Doctor Who that I stopped watching it. I probably would have finished the entire series if it wasn't for Doctor Who. But, you know, I was kind of pulled in and swept away.
And you said, I think you pointed something out to me, that there was actually a Dalek that showed up in some of this stuff. What's that all about?
Yeah, so chalk it up to me probably paying far too much attention to every aspect of the video. The one video that was released by my new friend, Ryan Farrell. Not that we're actually friends, but I'm just going to say that. Yeah, towards the end of the video, the episode is rumored to be called Robots of Sherwood. It might not be that big of a rumor anymore. It might actually be the truth. And I always thought, or I had read somewhere, I can't place it now, that it was going to be the Clockwork Robots from Girl in the Fireplace, one of my favorite episodes of Doctor Who. Maybe they're going to be returning, a little bit, a different take on them, what have you. But Robots of Sherwood, they would be there. And so that's just kind of what I chalked up in my mind. That's what was going to be happening. But then watching the video at about the 4:09 mark within the video, there's a guy that walks out from behind Peter Capaldi and Robin Hood, and he just so happens to be carrying a miniature Dalek. It's just odd to see him carrying such a small version, but it is a Dalek that he's carrying. So I don't know if it's just a visual cue to help them as they're working on the CG Daleks to put him in the episode after all the filming is done. But it's just kind of interesting that, sure enough, the guy walks out carrying a miniature Dalek, and that's just everything that you see from it. So perhaps within the third episode, I think, of season 8, we're already going to be seeing the Daleks show back up.
Have the Daleks ever been referred to as robots in Doctor Who?
See, that's, I have no idea. That's a great question.
Because I think there's a lot of these characters like the Daleks or like the Cybermen that from the outside appear to be robotic, but really they are, you know, there's humans inside of them, or not humans inside of Cybermen typically. And then, you know, Daleks have the little creepy aliens inside of them. So they're more a vehicle than a robot. So it would be that just the title alone is making me doubt that there would be Daleks, but
I could see what you're saying. It's just really hard for me to look past. I mean, why else would a guy be carrying a miniature Dalek through the set? And it's like right in immediate proximity of the actors.
Well, I mean, it is a Doctor Who set, so
that'd be true. That's just their reference point for all.
It could have just been a toy that the guy was carrying around, you know, or maybe he was giving it to the, you know, the guest actor. What's his name? Riley.
Tom Riley.
Maybe that was his going away present or something. I don't know.
That's the one thing that he decided to take off the set.
He had a choice to take one thing, and he said he wanted to take a miniature Dalek.
A miniature golden brown wooden looking Dalek. It makes sense. I'll take it.
But yeah, we'll see. I mean, speculating is half the fun, but once these episodes really come out, we'll probably look really silly. We'll be like, oh wow, we were way off on that.
It's not Robin Hood. It's not Sherwood. No. There's no Daleks. He doesn't even have a bow in the episode.
So, all right. Well, let's move on to our episode reviews. We're actually doing some episode reviews today. If you're new to the show, kind of a quick explanation. We are going through all the classic episodes, classic Doctor Who episodes available on Hulu Plus. So we've been working through it for quite a few episodes now. We are now into season 2 of classic Doctor Who, and the episodes that we're reviewing today are actually the storyline titled The Rescue. But before we get into The Rescue, because Hulu Plus doesn't have every single episode available, there are episodes out there that we are missing, and it just so happens that we missed 6 episodes that were about the Daleks, and they were called The Dalek Invasion of Earth. And I didn't want to just kind of skip these, and I wanted to at least talk about it because this is when Susan, our favorite companion, leaves the TARDIS. So that's a pretty big event. You know, the Doctor has lost a companion, and anytime that happens in Doctor Who, it's always a big event. So I wanted to at least acknowledge it and kind of get your thoughts, Adam, on Susan no longer being part of the crew, and we missed it. We didn't even get to see how it happened.
and I have a sneaking suspicion that you know how I feel about this, because one of the first things that I did after I started watching these episodes is I texted you and simply said, Susan is gone. Yeah, that's it kind of blows me away that here we've been kind of talking about it leading up to this point in time, and both of us kind of wondering, okay, how does this happen? How could the Doctor be separated from his granddaughter? It's not only a companion that is no longer with him, it's a fairly major companion within the story of Doctor Who. It causes a lot of questions. It brings up a lot of unanswered questions. But sure enough, we start these episodes and we realize there's a major absence going on, and then come to find out, the episodes that we can't watch, that's where it all goes down. So I kind of have mixed feelings. Kind of excited about what has happened, but actually really sad that we don't have that closure of seeing our first companion go off somewhere else.
Yeah, I think I'm more sad than I thought I would be. I knew that these companions, and you know, Ian, Barbara, Susan, I knew they weren't going to be with the Doctor forever. I was very curious to see how they left, because, you know, I haven't watched most of the classic stuff, so I'm not aware of some of these characters' fates. So I really wanted to know. And when I came in and you texted me that, first of all, I hadn't watched the episodes yet, so thanks for spoiling me.
Spoilers. Sorry.
Spoiling me from a show from 1965. But
yes. I think the period of time has passed on that.
I think so. You're right. I don't know. With shows that are that old, I feel like it restarts.
At like, some point, we re-hit the timeline where it's like, nope, no more spoilers at that point.
Yeah, it's been long enough that anyone that's going back and watching that show now is probably, you know, they're starting fresh, so it's still a spoiler. So I think the classic Doctor Who spoiler policy has restarted, and Adam, you can no longer spoil me for episodes that you've watched before me.
Good point. Honestly, like, I think we need to have some sort of geek or nerd injunction where we sit down and we figure out what is the proper format for classic episodes, and where's the spoiler, where do spoiler warnings need to be dropped?
Yes. Yeah, so I was, you know, when you texted me that, I was like, oh, wow, that, you know, that kind of stinks. But I didn't know that she was just gone, you know, as soon as you started watching the episode. I thought something happened to her in the episode. So, you know, but I came to find out pretty quickly as I started watching the episode that she was not there anymore, and I had no idea why. So I did go back, and I'm sure you did as well, and read kind of the synopsis of the episodes that we missed just to see how it all went down.
Yeah.
And so... But I thought it was interesting that the Doctor actually chose to let, you know, he basically, I guess, kind of locked her out, you know, kind of thing. Like, you're better off without me.
Yeah.
She meets a guy. The guy actually asks her to marry him. And the Doctor sees that she's conflicted about either going with the guy whose name is David or coming back onto the TARDIS. And so he kind of makes up he makes up her mind for her and basically locks her out of the TARDIS and says, you know, you're better off without me. He actually gives a pretty impassioned speech. I don't know. Did you see that? Did you see that video that was there?
No, I didn't catch the video.
There's a video on the wiki page that actually has his kind of farewell speech to Susan. It was actually pretty good, pretty sad. Brought a little tear to my eye. So,
got you in the feels.
Yeah, you know, it's if I'm gonna drop a tear for Susan, I mean, that's a pretty good day. So I'll throw the audio into the podcast here, but yeah, it was a pretty good speech that he gave, kind of wishing her the best and telling her to live a good life, and it was good stuff. So
Grandfather!
Listen, Susan, please, I've double locked the doors, you can't get in. Now move back, child, where I can see you. During all the years, I've been taking care of you. You, in return, have been taking care of me.
Grandfather, I belong with you.
Not any longer, Susan. You're still my grandchild, and always will be. But now, you're a woman, too. I want you to belong somewhere, to have roots of your own. With David, you'll be able to find those roots and live normally like any woman should do. Believe me, my dear, your future lies with David, and not with a silly old buffer like me. One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine. Goodbye, Susan. Goodbye, my dear.
So farewell, Susan.
Farewell, Susan.
We weren't always the kindest to you, but you were always good to us.
Cheers. I just watched the Hunger Games for the first time. I feel like we need to like have a canon sound.
Every time a companion's lost,
we need to sound a canon.
And I could be wrong about this, but I think her last words on the show were "Grandfather."
Oh, that is probably so true. I can see her standing outside the TARDIS like,
it is.
Oh, I can't mess with the lock because if I do, it will be fused for all eternity. Grandfather, as it dematerializes.
You think I'm kidding? I'm pretty sure when I watch that video, that's what happens. Now, she may have said something afterwards, but she literally says, "Grandfather!" And then he explains to her why he locked her out, and then they leave. So I don't know if she says anything else after that. So that may actually be her last words on Doctor Who, although she does make another appearance somewhere down the road, but we won't get into that now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it's her last words, but it might be pretty darn close to being
her last words. She only makes one more appearance in Doctor Who after this, and it's in one of the anniversary specials. Or I don't know if it's an anniversary, but it's one of the, I think it's the five doctors, when five of the doctors got together.
Yeah.
She does make another appearance. But this is her last kind of as a companion appearance in the show, and she doesn't come back for quite a while.
Now the episode itself where she does leave, I'm reading through kind of the synopsis of that episode. It sounded like it was a really good episode. It makes me want to find a way to see those episodes. Now, I don't know if they're some of the lost ones. They probably are, but
they're not.
Just the idea of
actually not lost. They are, I believe, if Wikipedia is correct, I believe they are. You can watch them. They're on video, and if you wanted to try to get them, the best way I would recommend is if you have a Netflix account, you have the option to have the DVD in mail option. So I would say just turn that on for a month and get them through the mail that way, and then turn it back off when you're done watching them so you don't get charged an extra month. But that's probably the best way, and maybe the only way, other than just buying them on Amazon or something.
But the idea of Dalek invasion in the 22nd century and a freedom fighter,
and they're actually in London.
Yeah,
it looked, and I saw a lot of screenshots from it, so it does look like a cool episode. But yeah, we missed them. They weren't on Hulu Plus. Thanks, Hulu Plus.
As much as you've served us, you have failed us.
You have failed us in this time. But hey, that's six episodes we didn't have to watch, so we're moving along faster than we would have.
Didn't have to watch? You mean didn't have the privilege to view?
So let's actually talk about the episodes that we're going to review here. And they happen right after the Dalek invasion of Earth. And it's the... Actually, you know what? There's one more thing I wanted to mention before we get into the review. And did you know that there was actually a film that was based on the episodes, the Dalek invasion of Earth?
I did not. Please tell me about it.
Yes, there was a movie that they made. It was called Dalek's Invasion Earth 2150 AD was the name of the movie.
Huh.
And it was a Doctor Who film. They actually made two of these Doctor Who movies. I believe this was the second of the two. The first one was based on the original time that they met the Daleks and the Thals and all that stuff. So they actually made these movies. Now, the movies they're not considered canon with Doctor Who as we know it. So they deviate from kind of the Doctor that we know. In this version, the Doctor is just, I believe he's a scientist, and he has a granddaughter named Susan, and I believe they're, I am not sure of all the details, but I think there are even the characters are teachers maybe as well. Ian and you know what? I take that back. I don't think Ian and Barbara are in it, but there is a granddaughter named Susan, and you know, they kind of use the episodes that were on TV as a basis for the movies because they were just so, the Daleks were so popular in Doctor Who. And Peter Cushing, do you know who Peter Cushing is?
Yes.
The guy who played Grand Moff Tarkin in Star Wars?
Yeah.
He was the Doctor.
Oh, wow. That's actually surprising.
Yeah, so he played the Doctor in two films, and I think it's the only two films that have ever been made based on Doctor Who.
And it was in color.
And, well, at least the image on the wiki page is in color. But who knows if that was done post. But, so I haven't actually seen the movies, but I actually have watched the documentaries about these movies.
Huh.
Because back when I was first getting into Doctor Who, I was just watching anything I could find, and I came across the documentaries. And so I watched the documentaries about the movies that I had never even seen. But, yeah, it was interesting. I think, it's a different take on the Doctor. Some of the elements are the same, but he's not an alien and all that stuff. I don't know if the movies are any better than the TV show. I haven't seen them yet, but I'd be interested in tracking them down and maybe watching them someday.
Yeah, that's really interesting just to kind of get. I mean, there we have just a. Yeah, it stars Peter Cushing as a human scientist named Doctor Who.
Right.
That's really a really, really strange deviation from what we know. And it would be so strange that it would be really fun to watch.
And I think I'm looking at the page now. I guess the companions are Susan and Louise and Tom. So I guess Tom and Louise kind of play the role of Ian and Barbara, but I think they're a bit younger. We'll have to, maybe one day we'll go and watch these and we can review them on the show.
That would be fun because this has definitely piqued my interest in what these look like and how they work.
So, now, without further ado, we can actually talk about the two episodes that we're reviewing tonight. The original air date for these were January 2nd of 1965. So now we are in the year of 1965. We've made 2 years of progress in Doctor Who. And the title of the episodes are The Powerful Enemy and Desperate Measures.
Episodes 10 and 11.
10 and 11 of season 2?
Yep.
Okay. So, do you remember how many episodes were in season 1?
No, I don't. Something tells me that there were like 16 to 20, maybe.
At least, I'd say, yeah.
At least. But
we'll have to get a tally. I'd be curious. I haven't been keeping track of how many episodes we've actually watched and reviewed, but we should be keeping a tally.
Yeah, because we know that there's like 360-something episodes of Doctor Who, so we should probably start keeping tabs of where we are.
So these episodes, I guess kind of the beginning of the episode, we see a ship that has crashed, and there's this young woman in the ship, and there's a guy in there as well. He looks like he's been injured. He's in a bed. She's talking to him, and she's like all excited that, you know, she thinks that the rescue ship has come, and he's like, you know, it's not a rescue ship, whatever. And he's being a complete jerk to her. And I mean, right away, you're just like, this guy is a complete jerk. Didn't you feel the same way?
Yeah, no, I was definitely right there with you because I found it interesting that the episode starts. And like you said, it's just the crash spaceship, essentially the two survivors. And really, there's no, I mean, we're used to basically starting and you have the TARDIS and you have the companions right there. And they basically introduce you to the planet and everything that's going on. Slightly different on this one. But yeah, the guy who is just laying there on the bed is really just acting like a wet blanket. She's all excited and bubbly that the rescue ship has landed. And he's basically telling her, no, you're wrong. Can't be right. They're still far away. Just wait and see and you'll find out I'm still right.
Yeah, and we find out later that these characters are named Vicky and Bennett.
Yes.
So we'll try to be better at actually saying the character names. But we do eventually get to see the doctor and the companions, and that's where we kind of notice for the first time that Susan is not there. And I guess this is just the aftermath of what happened with the invasion of the Daleks. They seem to still be kind of maybe recovering from that. It seems like Barbara, I don't know, she mentioned something about the doctor was asking her how she felt, and she was kind of like, oh, I feel better. Like, so something must have happened to her. Did you pick up on that? Did you notice that?
Yeah. Okay. It definitely, the doctor was asleep in a chair.
Yeah.
So he's definitely recovering, and there's some conversation about his age, and he's never slept through a landing before. Yeah. And
Ian does some kind of weird thing where did you notice where he was like, oh, I think he's getting a little, and then he does some weird thing with his hand, almost like,
yes,
like a crooked hand or something. I was like, wow, that was kind of mean.
Yeah, it's more comments about the doctor's age and that he might be slowly losing his ability to even take part in what's happening. Yeah, there was some weird hand motions going on there. Some like mixed between his hand can't function and possibly the modern symbol for the guys going crazy. So like the finger and twirling around your temple, whatever. But yeah.
Yeah, the companions, and I think we've kind of pointed out before, but they definitely don't look to the doctor the same way kind of the modern series is, where you always have the companions basically looking at the doctor as this like supreme being that, you know, can do no wrong. And in this older classic series, at least so far with the first doctor, the companions, although I believe they respect him, there's definitely a level of like, who's this old guy that we have to deal with, you know?
Yeah, he's becoming more of just like that. They definitely seem like they finally like to have him around. The doctor is no longer threatening to leave them, and they're no longer threatening to leave him. But he is more of that comical sidekick where it's just like, oh yeah, the doctor, that's just who he is. Very eccentric. It's all funny. It's all fun and games. We're still alive. Nothing bad has happened, and we just get to travel. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting, strange dynamic that we see still with this first doctor.
And Ian is in his Sunday best. He's got another suit on. So he seems to always dress for the occasion. And this episode is no exception. He's wearing like a really nice suit and a tie. So I'm always impressed to see, you know, what Ian is wearing.
I know. He has a plethora of outfits, and it seems like everybody else seems to wear almost the exact same thing, no matter what planet they land on. But Ian, he's the Renaissance man who can do anything and always has the outfit for the occasion.
I'm liking the suit and tie look much more than the turtleneck, though.
Yeah, I think that Ian is actually the inspiration for every doctor's outfit that has come afterwards.
Ah, that'd be interesting to research. We'll see if he ever rocks a bow tie.
Well, I am almost positive we will see that at some point.
So the TARDIS actually lands in these caves, and so they leave the TARDIS. Actually, the doctor, he says he's going to go back inside and sleep more. So they keep making these jokes. I actually kind of thought it was funny when the doctor was trying to go back to sleep. I found it kind of humorous.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that catches you off guard. It's like, I definitely did not expect him to say that he was going to go sleep more. But
they end up coming face to face with this alien, air quotes. And as soon as I saw the alien, and I don't know how to describe it other than it's a spiky alien. Like, it's this, the costume that they have for this alien is just spikes, like all these spikes. It almost looks like some sort of an insectoid type alien.
Yeah, it kind of looks like one of those funny looking pinatas that you would pick up from the store, because it looks like everything is just kind of paper mache onto it, with the stalk eyes and the weird spikes coming out of everything. But yeah, spiky, strange, floppy alien.
And I thought right away, as soon as I saw the alien, I was like, this just looks like a guy in a mask. And
You are not alone. I thought the exact same thing.
Because, I mean, even, like, the Sensorites, you know, they had, like, a full body kind of outfit thing on. And obviously they were, you know, just guys in costumes. But, you know, it looked like they did some effort to make it look like an alien.
Right. And even, like, their floppy feet, you thought, okay, yeah, they're floppy feet, but they look functional to who that creature is. Nothing on this guy looked like it was functional. Like, the eyes didn't look like they worked. The mouth didn't look like it was supposed to do anything. Everything seemed like it was just one solid costume slash mask thing.
Yeah. So that was my first thought. And you can even see it in the notes. Like, as I was watching the show, I wrote that out. I was like, oh, look, they came face to face with a spiky alien or a guy in a mask. Well, you know, kind of jumping way ahead, we do end up finding out this guy actually is just a guy in a mask. But I thought it was kind of funny because I had convinced myself throughout the episode, you know, that it was just a really bad costume for an alien, but that it was an alien. So when it was revealed that it was a guy in a mask, I was like, oh, man, I called it.
I know. They ruined it, like, moving forward for everything. Because every time I try to convince myself, like, suspend reality and allow my imagination to take over, I'm going to remind myself that the one time that I actually allowed myself to believe it was just a costume and a spiky alien, they fooled me. So from this point forward, I am not going to believe anything I see on Doctor Who.
Right. So the alien, I can't even remember what happened as far as, does he talk to them on the edge of the cliff?
Yeah, he talks to him on the edge of the cliff, and then that's where Ian and Barbara separate. So,
Ian and the doctor go back inside the cave, right?
The doctor never came out. It was always Ian and Barbara by themselves. And then Ian and Barbara try to walk inside, and Ian keeps walking, but Barbara gets stopped by the alien, and then she gets pushed off the cliff.
He just tosses her off the cliff. And at this point, because the way it looked like the cliff was really high.
Yeah.
And so he pushes her off the cliff, and you hear her scream, and it sounds like a very long distance scream. And then, I'm like, they just killed Barbara.
I know. Like, I thought the same thing.
Susan's gone. I don't know how she got, how she's gone at this point. Now Barbara's dead. And I'm like, holy cow, this show is just going crazy on me.
they already are trying to jump the shark. they're only two seasons in, and they're trying to already drum up some more action. But yeah, I thought the same thing. It's like they honestly just pushed Barbara off a cliff. How does that work?
and I was thinking, man, what a horrible way for Barbara to die. Like, she was such an important character, and they just pushed her off a cliff. She didn't even have, like, a noble death or anything. But we find out pretty quick that she didn't die. She actually, I think the branch that was laying on top of her must have broken her fall.
Yeah, she makes some comment that she's like, she grabbed a branch as she was falling, and it was just enough to keep her from getting injured. But yeah, it's one of those cartoon moments where you kind of half expect to see her hanging from a cliff, holding onto a twig, just waiting for someone to pull her up.
Yeah. But they show her, when they show her, she's laying on the ground. So she actually did fall all the way to the ground.
She definitely did.
But there's, like, just a random, like, tree branch on top of her, which I was like, what? Like,
yeah.
So I guess that was the branch that she grabbed onto. It broke her fall, though, enough that it didn't kill her. And she actually seemed to be in pretty good shape after that. She didn't even look like she had a limp.
Nope. All things considering, she is fairly indestructible. But then Ian, he wanders back in, and he hears a scream. But then the spiky alien dude decides to pull out some construction equipment. I think that's what they explained, the odd-shaped staff that he's carrying around. And he completely destroys the opening to the cave. So Ian and the doctor are stuck inside.
Yeah, he has this, like, staff-like weapon that it shoots out some sort of a invisible beam that, like, blows stuff up, right?
Yeah, like, pretty much.
Causes collapses of caves. It can start fires later on. So, yeah, it's an interesting weapon.
It's a Swiss Army tool knife thing of aliens.
And it's a convenient weapon on a show like this that has kind of a small budget when it comes to special effects, because there's no beam that comes out of it, or, you know, they don't have to have any kind of thing like that. It just, he holds it up and then rocks fall down, and you just assume that that's what caused it.
Yep. And it was believable. I've fully bought into that.
Yeah, I did too. It was good. You know, you got to work with what you got. It's 1965. They didn't know how to do the laser beams yet.
So. And even if they did, I don't think I'd want to see them.
But yeah, so this guy, this alien's all cocky, and he thinks, okay, I killed all these people, and you know, he's convinced that he has done away with these invaders that have showed up to his planet.
We never see how Barbara ends up with Vicky.
Right, because I guess it's kind of assumed that Vicky finds her and takes her in. You know,
yeah,
she brings her back to the wreckage. You know, hides her under a blanket so Bennett can't find her.
Yeah, it's one of those things though where like there's so many different moments where it's like I have no idea how that happened, but it obviously did. Like the one thing we see is the alien coming into the spaceship and then confronts Vicky that she was walking around and she shouldn't have been outside walking around. And he says that he killed everybody. And then he goes into the room to talk to Bennett, or who we think he's talking to Bennett. And then she pulls Barbara out from underneath the blanket. And it's just like, oh, Barbara's there with her. That's cool. They met. Now they're best friends. But then the alien's standing in the room with Bennett for who knows how long, and they never see him leave. It's like, that's your first dead giveaway. It's like, he never leaves the room, and yet he's gone.
I didn't pick up on it either. And I thought it was funny. She's talking to Barbara, and they're talking like really loud.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, this guy is just in the next room, right? Like, if she's trying to hide Barbara, you would think she would have tried to do a little bit better of a job. But, yeah, when the guy comes back out and he's like, yeah, the alien left. And I'm like, well, I didn't see him leave. There must be a back door. That's basically what I was thinking. But at this point, I had not picked up on it yet. Had you picked up on the fact that it was the same person?
I didn't know it was the same person, but I did think it was kind of strange that they're like, oh, has he left yet? I didn't see him leave. And then the guy comes out and he's like, oh yeah, he left. And it's like, how, why? Like, that should cause some weird flags in your mind as far as how did he leave? He didn't walk through the only door that comes into this place. And he obviously didn't notice Barbara was there. So yeah, anyways.
And so I thought it was humorous that Vicky felt the need to spell her name out to Barbara.
Yes.
Because Barbara asked her what her name was, and she said Vicky. And then she's like, V-I-C-K-I. And I was like, is that not like a normal name? Like, why did you feel the need to spell it out?
Is that basically, like, the only thing that took place in my mind at that point is Barbara asked if her name was like Victoria. Is it short for Victoria? And she's like, no, it's just Vicky. And then she spells it out. Was that like not a super common name back in the 60s? Like, that a pretty dramatic futuristic spelling of Vicky?
Right, because it's such a common way to spell Vicky now. And I just kind of thought maybe back then, like, yeah, right, what you just said, like, maybe back then that was not very common. You know, if you went by Vicky, it was just short for Victoria maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I just thought it was funny. I like laughed out loud because she just made such a big deal out of it.
When she spelled her name like that, though, that started a trend. From that point forward, families, parents started naming their daughter Vicky. Not Victoria, not Vicky with a Y, but they went straight up Vicky with an I.
And we kind of missed the part where the doctor and Ian were in the cave. Now, Ian is not dead.
At the cave.
Ian's not dead, even though the alien thought he was dead. I thought it was kind of funny when the doctor comes out of the TARDIS, and a lot of overacting came at this point, because Ian is like falling all over himself, and the doctor comes out and he's freaking out and he's like, what's going on? I can't see anything. And like, you can see clear as day.
Yes.
So, I thought that was pretty funny. He had to go back in and get his flashlight. And, so he could see Ian, who was literally just 1 foot away from him. Yeah. And, we all, as the audience, could see him perfectly fine, but the doctor apparently was having some trouble seeing through that dust.
And there's a pretty interesting like exchange there, because the doctor's explaining, no, I've been to this planet before. Everybody's very friendly on this planet. Are you sure that's who it was? And so the doctor has some history here and seems pretty flabbergasted that the native aliens would cause such a ruckus and try to kill all the companions.
Right. And he said they were a peaceful people. And that I believe that he said there was only like 100 of them that lived on the planet when he left.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yep.
So the doctor and Ian at this point, you know, they're trying to navigate through the caves, and we get to the point, like kind of the Indiana Jones moment where Ian accidentally like pulls the wrong thing and all of a sudden these spikes come out of the wall.
Yes.
And were you getting some Indiana Jones vibes there?
I was, but a very comical Indiana Jones, because they're moving so incredibly slow, and like the handle that Ian pulls, it's like, okay, seriously, you pulled it out and there's this massive cord that follows it. You didn't bother to think that something wrong was going to happen. And then he freaks out because it's moving so slow. And they're razor sharp, but they're like 2x4s sticking out of the wall.
And they're like, the space in between them is so wide. And like Ian's acting like I'm trapped now.
Yeah.
You know, I can't get back to you, doctor, because these things are sticking out. And I'm like, dude, just kind of scooch between them. There's like a 3-foot gap between each blade.
Exactly. Or maybe walk like a foot further out on the ledge. Just slightly quickly, and then you could walk around them before they completely encage you in razor sharp 2x4s.
But the ones that came out first were like on either side of Ian.
Yeah.
But then to make matters worse, these other ones start coming out like right in the middle, so it starts to push him off the ledge. And obviously there was some kind of a creature down at the, I think they called it like a sand monster or something.
It was a flesh eating beast. But not really.
And it was like down at the bottom. So, you know, if Ian didn't die from the fall, he was going to get eaten by the monster.
Yes.
So to add,
who he affectionately referred to as the executioner.
But we had talked about it before. You know, Ian was dressed for the occasion. So luckily he had his suit coat on and he could take it off and use that to cover the blades. And then kind of scooch around the end of the blades, you know, kind of like you were saying before, just kind of go around them on the edge of the thing or whatever. And he was fine. So I thought that whole scene was very humorous and, you know, just kind of how ridiculously easy it would have been for anybody to get out of that situation, but how dramatic they tried to make it seem.
Yeah, it was one of those moments where it was like, okay, they needed to have some type of cliffhanger at the end of the two episode, like in between the two episodes, and they seem to kind of just come up with that one and try to make it way more dramatic than what it needed to be.
Yeah, and we have to put ourselves in the minds of a child back in the 1960s, and that probably would have terrified us.
Yeah,
but
I would have been on the edge of my seat.
So that was the end of the first episode, and then we start in with the next episode, which is where he gets out of the situation. They kind of start out with that. This is actually the Desperate Measures episode. It's gone down in history as the first Doctor Who episode to break the top 10 of the most watched British television shows.
Wow. Well done.
Did you see that stat?
I did not see that interesting bit of trivia.
Yeah, apparently that's a thing in the UK. You know, they rank the top 10 most watched programs at any given time, and that was the first time Doctor Who had broken the top 10.
Wow.
And I guess they said that, I was reading a little bit about it today, that even up until now, it's still one of the most watched Doctor Who episodes of all time. People were loving it, I guess, more than we were. Maybe they just heard the Doctor was getting a new companion. that tends to bring out the audiences. So we go back to the spaceship, and Barbara is trying to convince Vicky that they need to stand up to the alien, and that she can get help from her friends, and they can overpower the alien, right?
Yep.
But Vicky is, you know, against the idea. She's like, we can't do that. And then, kind of another funny scene, we get a scene with Barbara sees Vicky and she sees that same monster come out of the caves.
Yeah.
And she thinks that she needs to save Vicky's life. And I knew as soon as she went and grabbed that gun thing, which I think was just like a flare gun.
Yeah, which I think it was interesting that like they showed like 20 seconds before Barbara's like cleaning up. I don't know. She's like trying to tidy up or keep house or something. And she comes across this flare gun and she looks at it and then she puts it away. It's like, why don't you use that against the alien? If you're trying to seriously get away from him, that would be pretty handy. But then she comes back to it to save Vicky's life.
Right. Which we find out that she didn't really need to save Vicky's life, apparently, because Vicky actually liked this monster.
It was... Barbara blew away a poor little vegetarian monster.
And it was pretty... I knew. Like, as soon as she came out with that gun, I was like, nah, she should not be doing this. And she shot... she killed that thing. That thing, like, caught fire.
Yeah, and it had probably the saddest dying noises that I've heard on Doctor Who so far.
So, and funny trivia, the actress who plays Barbara, Jaclyn Hill, actually was injured during that scene.
Oh, really?
I guess the explosive was more powerful than they thought it was going to be, and it actually...
Nice.
She suffered shock and a sore face is what it said.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that I was actually surprised at the explosion that takes place in that scene. I wasn't expecting it to be what it was.
Well, what I'm wondering is, she was injured. Did they actually use the scene that she was injured in as, you know, part of the show? Like, was that what we saw, was when she actually was injured, or did they do another take?
Most likely, because it looked like there was some genuine surprise that took place there.
Yeah, and that thing blew up pretty big, yeah. So So the trials of being an actress on Doctor Who in the 60s.
When they give you real explosives into your hands and expect you to kill monsters.
So Ian and Barbara, or Ian and the Doctor are reunited with Barbara in record time. It's only the second episode.
And so, none of them seem very surprised to see each other.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, something about this entire episode. There was some kind of almost too casual attitude about what was going on. Like, Ian's just kind of joking around about stuff, and they're just like, hey, Barbara, what's up? You know,
they've become very, very familiar with the trials of being a companion, and none of them, they're so unamazed by everything now.
Like, Barbara survived falling off of a cliff, and Ian survived a cave-in, and almost died from, like, spears and a monster, and then they're just sitting around this table, just joking around, like, you know, just, like, it's no big deal.
Yep. Exactly.
So Vicky reveals that she is from the year 2493.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised at how far in the future even she is to us.
And their rocket ship didn't look that advanced.
No.
Yeah, so she's, you know, from the, I guess there was a group of these people that came, or I guess their ship crashed, and then they went off to do something. And from Vicky's perspective, they all ended up dying. I forget.
The aliens killed everybody.
Oh, so she thinks the aliens killed everybody.
Yes.
But this alien that they've been communicating with, what's his name? Kukulian?
Yeah, Kukulian.
What are they always come up with these names, like it's like Tetoxel and Kakoxel and Kukulian.
Aliens or people from history, all they had were consonants. They had no vowels whatsoever. Everything just had to be consonants strung together.
So Kukulian is like the one alien that he says he can protect them or whatever from the rest of the bad aliens, right?
He was being their friend.
Right. So, yeah, so she believes that everyone else has been killed by the aliens. It's just her and Bennett left. Bennett is bedridden. He can't walk, although we saw him walk a couple times. So the doctor and Ian, they're there, they're talking, and the doctor basically says, hey, I want to meet this Bennett guy, you know, I want to go talk to him. He goes back into the room and we find out that Bennett actually isn't there, and he's just has this tape recorder that tells people that they can't come in now or something. I forget the exact words.
Yes.
Every time somebody knocks on the door, it's like, you can't come in right now. I was actually watching the show, and when he said that, I was like, wasn't that the same thing that he's been saying? Like, not even thinking that there was a tape recorder. And then the doctor finds out, and I was like, oh, okay, that's why. But yes. So that's the point of the episode where if you hadn't figured it out already, you're starting to realize, oh, this Bennett is actually, he is the alien.
He's not only a jerk, but he's a murderer as well.
Right. So this is the part where I figured it out. Had you figured it out before that, or was it this big reveal that helped you?
No, I still didn't know he was the same one in the same, but I definitely had a feeling that he was involved somehow. He was far too much of a he just seemed bad from the very beginning. So,
and the doctor, like, he finds a secret passage in the floor of the room, so he follows it.
So that's how you get out of a completely locked room.
Right. There's not a back door. There's a secret passage in the floor.
Yep, which every spaceship has secret passages in the floor that just go out into the vacuum.
Right, yeah, right.
It's really handy that way.
Because it wasn't like...
It's definitely not a smuggler's compartment. Like, it's not your Star Wars smuggler's compartment. It's like your eject, let's go for a spacewalk or watch some poor unsuspecting fool get sucked out into the vacuum.
So how had they said how long they'd been on the planet?
I'm sure they did. I can't remember. I think it was a couple weeks.
So, I mean, yeah, because didn't the secret passage that led out of the wrecked ship, didn't it lead into, like, the caves? Like, into some kind of ceremonial room?
I don't know if it led direct. No, it didn't lead directly in there because the doctor had to go back into the caves to go to the door that him and Ian walked by. And they were like, oh, look, there's a door. I wonder where this leads. Oh, never mind. Let's go to the obvious exit.
Got it.
He just wandered back to the door that was the only other entrance to anything at any point in time.
And this is where he finds Bennett, but at this point we still don't know it's Bennett. They haven't shown us that, but
he does.
He finds the alien and he knows right away because he's met these aliens before and he knows that they don't look like that. And that's just a ceremonial mask that they wear.
Right.
So he tells that to Bennett. Bennett knows he's been caught and basically confesses to the fact that he has murdered everyone. And he was a murderer that was on the ship, right? He was going to be going,
right.
If he got back to Earth, he'd be going to prison. So he wanted to basically prevent that from happening.
All the witnesses. So when everybody else shows up, he's able to pass along some horrible story about a horrible alien race that is a horrible people, and he just so happens to be a survivor. It's a lot like a Scooby-Doo moment. You have, like, this villain in a mask, and it's like, oh, pesky kids, you found me.
Yeah.
And he takes off his mask, and then he attacks the doctor.
Right, and the doctor puts up a pretty good fight for an old man.
Yeah, I was actually surprised, but then again, I somewhat expected him to be very easily chokeslammed and then the doctor to regenerate at that point in time.
So this is the part where I got confused. Because he's about to kill the doctor, and then just randomly there's these two dudes in, like, white outfits.
Yeah.
Just exactly. Standing there. Just like, and I was like, wait, when did these guys get here?
Yeah, and who actually are they? Bennett was pretty surprised too. He's like, you're still here?
Yeah, because I guess Bennett, not only did he say he killed the crew, but he claimed that he had killed all of the aliens, as well. So in his mind, there were no aliens left on the planet, right?
Right, exactly.
But these two guys, I guess, were aliens?
They never explain, but yeah, I think so.
Because when they first showed up, I thought they were the rescue crew. I was like, oh, the rescue crew has come, and they're going to stop Bennett, and they probably heard him confess, and so they're going to capture him.
I thought they were actually part of the other crew that Bennett thought he killed.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, I was so confused. And they don't say anything. They just, like, really creepily walk toward Bennett, and he's like, oh, no, you guys are alive, and he, like, backs up and then just falls down a hole.
Yes.
Which really confused me too, because I don't know. It's just such a weird way for somebody to die. Like, he just walking backwards, and then he just falls.
Yep.
down a hole that I didn't even know was there.
And then he's gone, and then these two very strange men deliver the doctor to the busted up spaceship.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, because he says...
Because he passed out.
Yeah, he says, I don't know, the two men I saw just laid me down outside the spaceship.
Okay, and then Ian brought the doctor back into the TARDIS.
Yep.
Because that's the next time we see the doctor. He wakes up in the TARDIS. Ian's like, oh, I hope you don't mind. I used your key. And then at this point, I'm thinking, wait, didn't they already establish that Ian wasn't allowed to use the key because there was some kind of certain way you had to do it? And it would lock forever and melt or something?
Yeah, yeah. I guess by this point in time, by season two, he's finally learned.
He now has the key privilege.
Yeah.
He's allowed to actually unlock the door.
He's now on par with Rose Tyler.
So... Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny, though, because I just, for some reason, that stuck in my head that they were not allowed to unlock it. Only Susan and the doctor were allowed to do that.
Right.
So maybe when Susan left, he became honorary key holder.
He's now first mate of the TARDIS ship.
And this is where we get to see the doctor, you know, bring on a new companion for the first time.
Yep.
He and Ian and Barbara are talking about it on the TARDIS, and they're like, oh, we should bring her with us. And then the doctor... comes to the same conclusion on his own and, you know, basically offers for her to come with him, and she readily accepts. So we get our first brand new companion, and it looks like we're going to have another kind of young woman on the ship. I guess she seems a bit older than Susan, though.
Yeah, she's definitely a bit older than Susan, and she, at this point, at least at this point in time, she's been through a lot, and she readily admitted that she has no family connections whatsoever. So the TARDIS and the doctor is all that she has. So that's pretty interesting too.
Then I've got nobody.
My dear, why don't you come with us?
In that old box.
We can travel anywhere and everywhere in that old box, as you call it, regardless of space and time.
Then it is a time machine.
And if you like adventure, my dear, I can promise you an abundance of it. Apart from all that, well, you'll be amongst friends. Well, now suppose I leave you here for a moment to think about it.
So yeah, we have a new companion, and then the way that the episode ends, I thought was just great, because the two aliens go into the busted up spaceship. As the rescue ship is hailing the busted up spaceship, and they basically just crush everything. They just destroy the instruments and the communication array, and nothing is taking place at that point. And then we go back to the TARDIS, and they dematerialize, which the TARDIS sound, I thought, played a little bit later than what it should have. Like, the TARDIS was already almost gone by the time that the TARDIS noise played, but that's beside the point. And then we come to the point where everybody inside the TARDIS is falling all over the place again because something went wrong.
Well, yeah, they fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
which I kind of laughed at. Yeah, the TARDIS lands on a cliff somewhere, and it starts tipping off the edge. And then I guess they don't have, like, artificial gravity inside the TARDIS, because if it falls off a cliff, then they fall over as well.
And yeah, the TARDIS doesn't know how to fly at that point, I guess.
But what did you think about Vicky as a character? We didn't really talk about her much as we were going through the episode, but, you know, is that a type of character that you think you'd be interested in watching as a companion?
I'm afraid that she might be a little too helpless. She seems less spastic than Susan, though.
Really?
She might be still a little bit spastic herself. Yeah, I
felt like she was more spastic. I mean, Susan is more like, I don't know, impulsive maybe would be the word I would use.
Well, we're catching Vicky at a very bad time.
True.
She's been crash landed on a planet. Everybody she knows has been killed, and she's been living with a maniac for the past who knows how long, who turns out to be the murderer of everybody. And then the only thing that she did care about on the entire planet Barbara blew away with a flare gun. So we're getting her at a very rough point in time. But yeah, she seems to be a little bit more level-headed than Susan, which isn't saying much. But yeah, I'm hoping that she just doesn't turn into a very helpless female companion. But I guess we do have Barbara to balance it out, who has really taken on a strong role in and of herself.
I'm just wondering how much longer Barbara and Ian have. You know, is this a changing of the guard? You know, they're bringing Vicky in, and then, you know, who knows how much longer until they bring another character in to replace Barbara and Ian.
Yeah, I only hope that we get to see, or we get to say a formal goodbye to those two companions, because I would be pretty bummed if I don't get a good goodbye to Ian and Barbara.
Yeah, they're kind of the main companions in my mind, even more so than Susan. Like, Susan was already there, you know, when they first met the doctor and Susan. Like, Susan came along with the doctor. She was already part of the, you know, the doctor's life before Ian and Barbara showed up. So Ian and Barbara were like the first companions, you know, that came to the TARDIS and, you know, came along this journey with the doctor.
Right.
Susan was already there. So yeah, they'll be, in my mind, they're the first companions, although I guess Susan technically is. But yeah, so it'll be kind of sad to see them go. And I'm with you. I hope Hulu Plus has those episodes, because I would hate to just have to read a summary of the episode to see how they ended up leaving.
Yeah, that might be Susan. Okay, I can kind of let her float by without taking extra steps, but I might have to figure out some way to get a hold of those episodes if we get to that point and we don't get to say goodbye to those, to Barbara and Ian. That just wouldn't seem right to me.
All right, so anything else on this episode that you wanted to talk about? Anything that stuck out to you?
No, I would say with only two episodes and the amount of time that we talked about it, we covered just about every interesting aspect of the episode.
And even some not so interesting aspects, probably.
Exactly. I think we gave a good, well-rounded coverage of these two episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah, they were eventful in my mind, because we get a new companion. It's the first episode that we don't have Susan. Other than that, though, just the story itself was kind of weak in my mind. You have this crazy guy that, I mean, there's only two people on this planet, and he's dressing up as an alien and, like, literally going around in circles trying to trick this woman. Like, the more you think about it, this dude was really messed up in the head.
Yeah,
so
he was a few fries short of a Happy Meal.
Yeah, so, and even like just the costume design of, even though I know it wasn't supposed to be an alien, it was kind of weak in my mind. So not, these two episodes weren't some of my favorites. I kind of missed the Sensorites a little bit after watching this one.
Nice. Yeah, it was a little bit lacking on the part of the story, and kind of like we mentioned, it seemed very flippant the way that the actors even approached the episode. There didn't seem to be as much intensity, which isn't the right word at all, but it was missing something even in watching it. But it's a fun watch one way or the other. It's always fun just to see where we've come from.
Yeah, it was fun. So, but with that, we will wrap it up. Thank you for listening to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio. We always appreciate you tuning in. As always, you can leave us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. Go over to iTunes if you haven't left us a review yet. If you've been listening to us, we would love for you to go over there. Leave us a nice review so we can get more visibility in the podcast world. We're also available on Stitcher now as well. So if you don't have an iOS device, you can still listen to us through Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast. We also have a Facebook page. We've been really updating Twitter and Facebook very regularly, posting a couple things every day. Videos about the episodes that we're reviewing. I have a couple videos that I'm going to be posting about these episodes. And just, you know, cool stuff that we come across on the web that relates to Doctor Who. And so check us out, Twitter, Facebook, And then you can always send us feedback, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. Shoot us an email. Let us know what you think about the show, what you think about the latest episodes that we reviewed. Give us your own thoughts. And, you know, if you shoot us an email and we find what you say interesting, we may actually read it on the show. And say something, Adam.
Say something. I'm giving up on you.
So
so what was I supposed to say at that
I don't
moment?
Know.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Later days.
Later days. Catch you later. See you on the flip side. Thanks for listening.
I wonder what the next episodes we're reviewing are.
I don't know, but I was looking.